Sylvia and me.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Beckerman. Join me today as I talk to an extraordinary woman who is changing the world by making a difference in her life and the lives of those around her.
Good morning. My name is Regina Skyer. I am a grandmother, a mother, a daughter, and an attorney. I am the founder of Law Offices of Regina Skyer and Associates, which now has 16 lawyers and about 10 paraprofessionals. So we're a little boutique firm, and we specialize in special education advocacy and law. And welcome to Sylvia and Me.
Regina, thank you so much for joining me here today. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of what's going on in today's world with the virus and the pandemic and so on, why don't you give us a little bit of background as to how you got into this field?
Okay. Yeah, I got into this field. I am a child of Holocaust survivors. And growing up as a child, my mother would share her experiences with my sister, brother, and myself. And what I always remember her saying is, no matter what the Nazis took from me and my family, they could never take my education. And that an education was the most important thing that we have, that we keep, and that we can give to our children. So I was raised with this appreciation for the value of education. And I was also raised in a very traditional Jewish home. And we were expected to make the world better, to do good with our life. So it was kind of, you know, I was a child of the 60s and 70s. And of course, I was going to be 50s, 60s, and 70s. I was going to do something in social work or education. So I began my career as a social worker and immediately was drawn to working with special education children. I was very fortunate to have met a wonderful mentor who was the owner of Summit Camp and Mayor Stiskin. And I became a summer camp director for special needs kids. And I recognized that this population needed a strong advocate. And as a social worker, I'd call and people wouldn't pick up the phone. And I said, you know, law is a very empowering profession, particularly for women. So at the age of 38, I went to law school, having four children at home and running a summer camp. And the rest is kind of history. I began doing two hearings, and now we do 2,500 cases a year, my firm.
Well, one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, as you know, right before this pandemic hit, I had spoken to one of your colleagues.
Linda Goldman.
And we were talking about special needs children and what is out there for parents to do and early knowledge of it and all the various things. And with what is going on with the pandemic, with quarantine, schools being shut down and online education, I wanted to talk to you about what is going on now. So what are some of the pressing questions that you get from parents these days?
I want to take a step back, but I will get to answer that, because one of the unintended, not such good consequences of COVID is that people with other health conditions other than the virus are neglecting it because they can't get to see doctors or they just put it on a back burner. And my great concern is that parents don't put this on a back burner. Starting as early as birth, there are basically three separate programs, they all fall under the same umbrella, that are mandated by federal, state, and local law. One of them is called early intervention, and that program serves children from birth to the age of three. Then we go into preschool special education, and then we go into 5 years old to up to 21-year-old children with special needs who are entitled to free appropriate education. So my background is completely in special education. So the first thing I want to caution people is if you have a young toddler and you see developmental delays, don't listen to your mother-in-law. Don't listen to the well-intended family members. Says, your husband was just like that. He didn't talk until he was three. If you have a child who is not meeting developmental milestones, the CDC tells us what these milestones are. Not all pediatricians are so acutely aware of the very early signs of autism. Become an educated parent. Don't, if something's haunting you, pick up the phone, no matter what jurisdiction you're in. Early intervention is a federal program administered through your local county, but there is a free evaluation, even in times of COVID.
That happens to be, I'm glad you mentioned that, because as you started off saying, people are so caught up that they won't even realize that they need to do this, that is very, very important for the health of their child and for also their well-being.
Absolutely. But, you know, you're trapped in the house. All of a sudden, you're watching that 14-month-old day and night, and you're saying, wait a minute, why isn't he made babbling? Why aren't we not getting good eye contact? Why do I see some physical delays? Pediatricians are real keen on. It's autism that they're becoming better and better. But if something haunts a parent, investigate it. Because the earlier we get children, early intervention, the likelihood of success is greater. So all of special education, first of all, I don't know what jurisdiction I'm talking to. Is your audience New York? Is it?
We're in Connecticut. I mean, my audience is all over. I'm in Connecticut, but the audience is national.
Okay. So special education law is federal law. It is the Individuals with Disability Education Improvement Act. We refer to it as the IDEA. And it is a federal law that came about in 1975 as a result of parent advocacy groups saying separate is not equal. Our children who have special needs are not getting equal access to education. All of special education law is civil rights law. It starts with Brown v. Board of Education in 1954, which clearly enunciated the principle of separate is not equal. By 1975, we have the premier and a piece of affirmative legislation, and that's called, in those days, it was the Education Handicapped Act, and it then became the IDEA, the Individuals with Disability Education Act. And this act guarantees for all children with identified special needs a free, appropriate public education. And the buzzword, or the litigated itch, or what we are in court about, is defining what is appropriate. So when a parent suspects that their child, a parent, a teacher, a social worker, the principal, anybody who's involved, the daycare center director, the nursery school director, the preschool director, they see a child and they say, something's not right here. There should be a referral to, in New York, we call it the Committee on Special Education. Connecticut calls it the Pupil personnel, every jurisdiction calls it something else, but it's basically known as in New York, which is really where my expertise lies solely, as the Committee of Special Education. And the Committee on Special Education, once they receive a written referral, they have to, and I'm going to talk about New York, Sylvia, because I don't know what the jurisdiction is. So in New York, they are obligated to adhere to a time frame to complete an evaluation, hold a review meeting, and determine eligibility, and then set up a program for a child. Now, one thing that has changed because of COVID is the Federal Department of Education said new referrals were going to toll the time that a school district has to respond. So it's not going to be 60, what we call compliance days. It's going to be once the schools reopen, then the clock is going to start ticking. Now, interesting, in New York City, where, again, the bulk of my practice, and as I said, we handle over 2,500 cases a year, primarily New York City, Nassau County, and Westchester County. A little bit in Suffolk, a very little bit in Rockland. We stay away because it's just too far to commute. So it's New York City and Westchester and Nassau County. Now, what we're seeing, though, is that the school districts are not putting it on hold. That whoever is taking in these new referrals, and we now have a whole new email address, is because of COVID, everything is being done remotely. You have to give consent to remote. Even evaluations are being done. Now, another suggestion I would have, because it's very interesting times, parents are now with their children much more than they ever were. They're seeing things that might be worrisome. They're comparing one child to another child, to a neighbor's child, and all of a sudden things might be bothering mom and dad. Well, what do you do? Yes, you make your referral to your school district, and the school district will give you a free comprehensive evaluation. They have to. Now,
how do they get the evaluation during COVID?
They're doing it remotely, just the way you and I are having this conversation. They're doing some testing. They're not as good. I've spoken with all the neuropsychs in New York City that I work with, and a lot of the psychologists. Some are comfortable testing remotely, others are not. The private evaluators are essential workers, and what they are doing, and that's another thing I want to talk about quickly. When a parent should get a private evaluation, an independent, even though they're pursuing perhaps an evaluation with their school district, if you can afford the $5,000 or $6,000, and that's a lot of money, but if you can afford that, I strongly recommend an independent neuropsychological evaluation for a child suspected of having some kind of learning issue. It's the best if you have a wealthy grandparent or a comfortable grandparent, or that is money well spent. That person is on your team, will always be on your team. Understand, will take a board of ed in New York City, the Department of Education will spend an hour. Oh, did I just lose you?
That's all right. There you are.
There I am. The New York A psychologist can evaluate a little five-year-old at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and spend an hour. Now, you tell me, what five-year-old at 4 o'clock in the afternoon is going to be performing at her best or going to be accurate? I mean, they're going to turn to you and say, I want to go home and have a...
Exactly. They have their own mind then. They're five. They're children.
Right. They're babies.
Right.
But when you go to a private evaluator, the first meeting is just going to be playing with toys, and it's going to be 11 o'clock in the morning or, 9:30. And then the next time, I have neuropsychs that spend six sessions with a child doing comprehensive testing. How can you compare that to an hour and 20 minutes, if that much, if at 4 o'clock on an afternoon? You can't.
Unfortunately, you can't.
Right. Now, there is a way in the law that we can get free independent evaluations. We have to dispute what your school district's done.
Okay.
So if the school district, let's say I have a kindergarten child, and that kindergarten child is a late birth, an early birth date, a February birth date, so he absolutely belonged in kindergarten, and he cannot identify his alphabet. He can identify the letter, but he cannot put words together. There's no early reading going on. And mom is now alarmed. And the teacher says, yeah, I'm concerned. Maybe next year we'll do some testing. Well, it's precious time that we're
very precious time. Exceedingly so.
Very precious. Now, would I take that child now to see a neuropsych? I think I would call up and say, listen, okay, but let's go back because the question wasn't that. So the question was, let's use another fact pattern since you can edit. So the fact pattern is I have a second grader. The teacher in kindergarten said to me, yeah, should we hold her over? But she's a tall girl. Nah, well, she doesn't need to be held over. First grade teacher is terrific. But by the end of first grade, my little Janie is still reading as a kindergarten student, and it's the end of first grade. And the first grade teacher says, she knows her math so well, but yeah, and she doesn't write too well. Maybe next year we'll do an evaluation. And now it's second grade, and right. She's still reading, and she comes back, she's reading on a kindergarten. The school district does a quick evaluation, and they say, well, she's made some progress over the summer. She's kindergarten, but we'll just give her some. We're not going to classify her, or we don't see her as, well, you as a parent have a right at that moment to say, I disagree with the evaluation that you did. You did it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, or you did it with her own reading teacher, or whatever the reason, I don't think this evaluation was right. It failed to address all of her issues. You only focused on her math skills, which were always well above grade level.
Exactly.
And I want an independent evaluation because I believe there's a language processing difficulty. I mean, there are a lot of subtle issues that will attribute to a learning disability or will result in a learning disability. And not all school psychologists can parse that out. You as a parent now disagree with the evaluation your school district did. You write and say, I want an independent neuropsych because I disagree. And the law is clear. It's one of the few times that a school district can take a parent to a hearing. They're either going to agree or they're going to take you to hearing. Now, in New York City, they don't even respond so often at the time. And then we can sue for the reimbursement of that independent eval. But as we started, for me, it's your child. Yes, if I can get something from the school district, great, particularly now at these tough financial times so many people have. But this is money well spent. And the independent neuropsychs are seeing children through in COVID. They're not opening their practices. Their waiting rooms are not busy. They're not opening their practices to having multiple clinicians there and multiple children. It's generally one child at a time. They sanitize. They're very concerned, but they're health professionals and they are seeing children.
Well,
and
one of the things that I'd like to talk about is how the school closings and the online schooling, how has that impacted? Because we know that children without disabilities, without special needs, without learning disabilities, some are having a hard time. So how are these parents?
One word, nightmare.
Okay. I couldn't imagine anything else. So what is some advice that you can give to parents now?
It's very interesting. When I say nightmare, your question and what's going on with these children with learning disabilities or children with autism. Okay. So, and again, my expertise is really New York City.
But in general, it's felt all over.
Absolutely. But children with special needs, if you're fortunate enough and your child is in a private special education school, the remote distant learning programs and plans that our private special education schools have created and implemented are hitting it out of the box. They are phenomenal. I am shocked, and I talk to clients day and night. They are engaging. They are holding Zoom classes, or they're using a Google Classroom. They are doing individualized learning. Of course, children who are severely disabled, it's not effective. But those children with language-based learning disabilities, the remote learning in the private schools is terrific. It is nowhere near that quality in the public schools. And those are the children that I am most concerned about. They are languishing. I mean, imagine if you were trapped in a two-bedroom apartment with three children and two computers. How is this going to happen? Many parents I talk to are just, they try their best, but they're just done and they can't do it. And what are we going to see? There's not going to be a child in the city of New York when they come back to school that is not going to have an educational regression. The special education children, if they're not in attendance at one of these premier private schools, we're going to see bigger regression. And that is very worrisome.
And with the economy being the way it is, a lot of people who have their children in some of the premier private schools are not going to be able to afford to keep them there.
Correct.
So what advice, what you said there's some federal laws, what advice can you give parents nowadays? I mean, as you said, nightmare is a word that really defines what's going on. So for a parent who is trying to homeschool their child, they know that their child is going backwards because there are so many things that they can't do, and they're not special education teachers, they are parents. So what advice can you give them? Is there anything that they could do to protect their child? And what happens when schools do reopen in September? Hopefully they will.
Hopefully they will. Hopefully they will, and they won't have to then go back on another lockdown. All of the private special education schools are in New York City. As I said, we have lots and lots of cases. And they are all preparing to open in September, but they have in place distant remote learning that could click in overnight if needed. Now, what can a parent do if their child is in a public school ICT class, integrated co-teaching or collaborative co-teaching, and that parent now knows that there's been no learning going on, and that even though she tries to read with her child every night, the reading is still on the very basic level, and all the progress that we had hoped for is not happening. Well, most of the teachers, and the teachers are really heroes in this. They are public school, private school. They're all heroes. The teachers are holding conferences with the parents, and it is imperative that every parent arrange to speak with, especially if your child has special needs and especially if they have an IEP, you arrange a private conference with that teacher, and you and your partner listen carefully and take notes and come right out and say to that teacher, what am I supposed to do? How can I help my child? And the teacher says, I don't know. Then the next question is, are you recommending a holdover? Now, many school districts are saying to parents, you have the option, parent, to hold your child over next year. And that's not necessarily a bad option. I mean, people don't like to do holdover because of the stigma. But is there going to be stigma now?
I would hope not, because if they don't hold their child over, that child's going to have huge problems.
And then self-esteem problems.
Oh.
Again, and the other issue is, so when you speak to that teacher, keep a journal, write it down, and in that conversation say, listen, here are my concerns. I've been trying to work with her. I can see that she's totally lost. The materials that you're sending home are not appropriate for her. What do you think I should do? Should I explore a private school? Come right out and ask that teacher. Because if the teacher says, yes, you should, I can't teach her either. I agree with you. She needs to be taught in a small class. There can't be 25 to 28 to 32 children in a class, even if we have two teachers. It's not sufficient. Well, that conversation with that teacher where she's saying, yes, go, that's going to help us if, in fact, we're going to be at a private school. You have to make your public school better if they can. And then again, you have to consider what are the other options and what are the options I can afford. Because you were right, Sylvia. Private special education schools cost $60,000+ a year. And that is just not tenable for most people.
Right.
But can you afford $10,000? Can you afford quality tutoring? If I can't afford a private school, are there some state-approved schools where I can fight and the school district pays directly? Yes, there are some. Sure there are. But there's also tutoring. There's something called compensatory education. And see, the problem that we're going to see is that school districts are very fearful. And they're fearful that every parent of a child with an IEP is going to say, I'm entitled to compensatory education. And New Jersey has already tried to have parents waive that right. No parent should ever waive that right. But to make a compensatory claim usually requires a lawyer. And I'll tell you what I tell parents when they come to me. I say, let's sit down and do the math. Don't hire me. Don't spend the money on a lawyer. Spend the money on your child. Find an Orton Gillingham or Wilson trained if your child has issues with reading. Find somebody who knows Judith Hochman's writing method. Find a quality teacher and see if you can provide that for your child. And maybe do it over the summer. Because most people have a few discretionary dollars that they can use. Well, that would be one way of doing it. And I don't know what the future lies in terms of lawsuits against school districts. I don't know. I mean, in New York City, it's a cottage industry. New York City has the best private special education schools in the world. You can find three or four on one block. And they're top flight, but they're very expensive.
All right.
Very expensive. And we have to be realistic. Not everybody can afford this. Most people cannot.
Right. Most people cannot. And also, as we talked about just a little while ago, with what is happening in the economy, with people losing jobs, with people being furloughed, even those who could afford it may not be able to afford it when tuition comes around again.
Yep.
So, you know, all in all,
I'll tell you, it's interesting you say that, because about 5%, it may be even less, of my current group of parents are either moving out of New York City, and not re-signing their children for the private schools. To my surprise, the rest are. And I think it's because of the disparity between what these fine schools are offering with distant learning. I mean, I see the standard that they're held to. It's a very high standard. I review their distant learning plans. They're amazing.
Now, why can't, say, a New York City school system or any other, why can't they be at the same standard? I mean, they're developing the online. Do they not have the resources to do it?
No, the New York City's budget is the size of Uruguay's gross national product. I mean, it's $33 billion a year. It's an enormous budget. I don't know why, but I have my own opinions why, and it boils down to real estate. I think that the class size is critical. If I know what I would do if I was ever chancellor of the city of New York, I'd put me out of business rather quickly. You can't expect teachers to teach in classes of 30 children. My grandchildren use New York City public schools, and I was there one day from somebody's birthday, and the kindergarten teacher knew who I was, and I'm looking at him saying, "Well, is there another teacher here with you?" And she said, "No, it's just me." 24 children, 24 5-year-olds, half of them were still calling her mommy. And I'm saying, "And you're teaching reading?" And she looked at me and she said, "And I'm teaching reading." How can you do that? And part of it is we don't have the real estate. No. Now that we have all this empty commercial real estate, come talk to me. We have to make early childhood centers. We don't have a very progressive mayor in spite of his thinking that of himself. And this is really a political question. Our public schools were in better shape under Mayor Bloomberg. Now I might get shot for saying this, care. Yes, we can. Why do I have so few cases in school districts like Edgemont and Larchmont Mamaroneck and Port Washington and Manhasset and Oceanside? Why? There's no trade secret out there. It's because the classes are smaller. Because the teachers, many of them are non-union school districts. The teachers are better compensated. Very rarely do I need a child to have an independent evaluation when they come to me from a better suburban school district. Those evaluations are beautiful. They're wonderful. So we need to start with the real estate, and we need to open early childhood centers. But these are dreams. So what can we do in reality?
Just continue being an advocate for our children?
Absolutely. I will continue till I can't work anymore. I do think that what's going to happen now, the bulk of my practice is about parents coming to me when the public schools have failed and saying, it's just not working. And I know my child is bright and has great potential. And we find the right private school, private special ed school. And then we build a case to sue. Now, prior to COVID, and these are only New York City statistics I'm going to give you.
Okay.
Only New York City.
I got it.
Okay. 97% to 99%. So let's use 97% of the cases that we handle are going to win or settle in New York City if prepared correctly. Now, I don't take every case, so I'm a very self-selecting. If you're with me, it's because I think we've got a case and it's worth the fight. They need to have good private independent evals. And if I see that a child is making pretty good progress, then I say, listen, you know, it might not be the progress you want, but it's not going to win a case. So use your money on more tutoring. And there are some parents that say, no, I don't care. I want to try it anyway. Well, okay. But for the most part, if you've tried your public school and your child is still not learning commensurate with his or her ability and not appropriately, then start looking for alternatives. This is their college fund. There will be no college otherwise. If you don't instill a love of learning, and more than that, if this is now affecting your child's self-esteem, you have no alternative.
Exactly.
COVID or no COVID, this is only, we're gonna have an economic bump. Yes, it's gonna be a different world. Yes, it's gonna be all kinds of new industries and new, but life will go on. And we as parents have that same responsibility that we had pre-COVID to our children and our grandchildren. Turn to grandparents who have perhaps more resources. I have this conversation with all my clients when we go over how am I going to afford this. And we'll make it happen. Do I think we're going to see the large? No, I think we're going to see perhaps a reduction in the dollar amount of settlements, or we're going to have to litigate harder. So we'll be a little bit more selective about cases that we're going to sue and cases where we're going to say to parents, try something else first, but never give up on that kid.
Well, Regina, I thank you so much. I mean, this is a difficult time for so many people. As I said before, parents in general with homeschooling their children, teachers are doing whatever they can. They are heroes. I think parents are realizing the value of teachers. And for parents with children with special needs, I think, unfortunately, it's going to have to be an acceptance of the fact that your child may have to be held over, and it would be the best thing for that child, and not feel guilty that your child has gone backwards. I think this is important information to get out there. There are so many people that are just pulling their hair out. They feel like they failed their children, and they haven't. And the school system, can you say they failed their children? We're in a situation that no one could have, I'm going to say foreseen, but no one has ever lived through this before. That's the only thing I'll say right now. So again, Regina, can you tell me, what is your website? I know you have some facts on there. Most of them might be for New York City, but guess what? A lot of times the same rules it'll get a question going for someone who can ask their school district.
Sure, please. My website has a lot of information. We also do webinars and jointly with other agencies. It's www.skyerlaw.com. It's easy to find me. I'm all over the web, law offices of Regina Skyer and Associates. Again, the takeaway from this should be, go with your gut. If you've got a real young baby, get a hold of early intervention as fast as you can. That is one of the most effective programs, free programs that we have. If your child is grappling and failing in school, make sure you get them an IEP. Make sure you start saving up for an independent evaluation. And if you need to, you're going to be exploring private schools with someone like me.
Regina, again, thank you so much.
Bye, Sylvia. So nice meeting you and talking with you.
Thank you for joining me today. On our next podcast, I'll be talking to another extraordinary, inspiring woman who has made her mark on the world. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform and, of course, our website, sylviaandme.com. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to keep up with the latest episodes. Review, rate, and take us with you wherever you are. I want to hear from you. If you know of an extraordinary, inspiring woman, please contact me at sylvia@lifeofprey.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay safe. This has been a Life of Prey production.